You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And on the newsmaker line with me, we have Robert Kudla, and he has a company called Trade Genius Academy, and he's our resident financial expert. As you know, you've heard Bob many times before. And I asked him to come on to talk about the Trump economic plan and how well it's working. Robert, glad to have you on. Glad you could join us.
Oh, Dave, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it's some good timing to discuss it because I think it's now going into full motion.
Yeah, well, let me give you a superficial view of what a lot of Trump supporters are saying. Look at what he's done. He's created 3 million jobs since he's been president. The tariffs are putting people back to work, like in the steel industry. And jobs are being created because the free trade agreements are being abandoned. The tax plan is keeping corporations in the country, and they're not taking as many jobs overseas. It's happy days are here again economically. Do you share that optimism, or do you have a different view?
You know, I share a lot of that optimism, but at the same time, you know, we're 9 years into this economic expansion, and there are some cracks, especially around the area of anything that really requires credit. So I think President Trump is doing all the right things and all the things that he needs to do. And essentially what he's trying to do is he's trying to just expand the pie completely. And I think his hope in doing that is that the extra incomes that people will be absorbing will be able to take care of some of the credit stresses people have that are causing some issues around, the auto market and credit cards and in the housing space. I think that's, you know, where his thinking is. But absolutely, it's refreshing whether you agree with him or disagree with him that he's been totally transparent in his approach. And he also understands clearly where the money is, and he knows that Europe and Japan and China and Korea have basically tooled their economies to basically deindustrialize the United States, and the people in this country, the elites, were happy to do so because it was just easy and cheap money for themselves. Didn't really cost them anything. They don't care anyway, you know, what industries are in San Francisco and in New York or, you know, D.C. You know, they basically created a Hunger Games kind of economy. And Trump's like, you know, that's not long-term beneficial for the United States. So I think he's on the right track. And what he's doing, which is fascinating to me, and I'll keep yakking until you tell me to take a breath, but he's really focusing on what I call the primary inputs of an economy. He's very interested in, as you said, steel and aluminum, and he wants to support, basically, because they want to spend a lot of money on infrastructure, they don't want that steel and aluminum to come from why should other countries get a benefit from the money we're going to spend in our taxes? He's very, very interested in the auto markets and making sure that the automobiles are produced here because of the supply chains that are woven into that. And then he's also, first thing he did was obviously was make us energy independent. And so the last piece that he doesn't talk about that I think will come into fore because as food prices start rising in value, it's going to be another leverage weapon that President Trump's going to have over China. And in fact, I just read today, and I know it drives you nuts, but it drives me nuts how simplistic people think. They say, oh, the Chinese aren't going to buy our soybeans anymore. And I'm like, the Chinese absorb 64% of all soybeans grown in the world. Well, if you take the United States out of it, they have a 25% deficit in soybeans in their country. So they can't walk away from our markets, even if they wanted to. And I think that's going to be another leverage weapon point. And especially this year, because of the severe La Nina and the cold weather we've been having, China's really struggling. I have friends that live over in Asia. They just tell me that northeastern Asia, which is, you know, Manchuria and China and Japan, those harvests are struggling. So I think he knows where he has to get the GDP growth has to come from these mercantilist countries. And he's like, you know what? I'm going for it. And he traps the Republicans because what do? Are you for these other countries? And he traps the left because the left said you're going to vote against giving your people jobs. So he knows he's in strong hand position, and I kind of like what he does. I'm a nationalist populist myself, and with a libertarian bent. And I think he and I see economics the same way.
I see it the same way too. I want to go back to what you said about food prices rising. How is that going to transpire?
Well, what's happening now, Dave, is that, as you know, we trade that at Trade Genius, and this year, it's already up. The core grain prices are already up about 20% over where they were last year. And so as it flows through the supply chain, it doesn't mean it's 20% increase at the retail level, but you're starting to see a push. And what's going to happen is you're going to see resistance from the retailers, like, you know, the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Costcos of the world are going to resist absorbing that cost. And at some point, it's going to get pushed to them, and then they're going to have to eat it for a while, and then it'll get pushed through to us. And that is a very big fly in the ointment because that further traps the Federal Reserve, and it may cause the Federal Reserve to do something stupid and try to increase the level of the dollar too fast and by raising interest rates too high and effectively choking off an economic recovery.
That's I can see what you mean by trapping the Federal Reserve, but they're trapped anyway. And I know I'm jumping ship here away from Trump, but I think they're trapped, and let me tell you why. There were two states in the last week that was Wyoming and Alabama that passed laws that said they won't tax people transacting in gold and silver. And now we see the rise of cryptocurrency. Isn't the Federal Reserve just in trouble on that basis alone because people are saying to the Federal Reserve no and hell no?
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I mean that's a show in and of itself. I think what the problem they have is, and I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, is that if they keep raising interest rates, which they say they want to do because they say things are normalizing, well, for your audience benefit, we're what's called a debt-based fiat system. That means the only way in which you can grow the money supply is to actually add debt to the economy. Well, the debt has to be carried by income growth. And if you can't grow income fast enough and the debt keeps increasing, you have what's called a Great Depression. You get what's called a deflationary collapse. And we pushed the 10-year up to 3%. And we pushed the 2-year up almost a double. And what that's starting to do is you're starting to see it's starting to percolate through profitability of companies and also households. So they know they can't keep pushing on that lever anymore. And the only other level they have is to keep buying back bonds. But that also I mean, stop buying back bonds. And it also increases interest rates, too. So they're trapped that way. And if they start easing again, you see it already. They've kind of been sneaky these last couple of weeks, Dave, because the stock market went unhinged in February. They've been sneakily buying assets while they're saying they're not. You can see it in their reports. And gold and silver immediately started to push higher. So they know now that they have no Goldilocks is gone for them. Now, to your point, is that the young people have basically said, I don't own any assets. So I could give a rat's patootie if anything and everything deflates, because that just makes things cheaper for me over time. And I'm simply going to opt out. And so you see it now. I mean, they're kind of freaking out that people under the age of 35 simply aren't in the stock market. Number one is they don't have enough assets. Number two, they don't have enough income to develop the assets. But number three, the income and the assets that they have, they're putting it into cryptocurrencies. And the only stock they're buying are marijuana stocks. And that's not from me. That's from TD Ameritrade themselves. So you know, so they're worried. Because that's the one thing they can't stop is they can't stop indifference, Dave. If people opt out, they're dead.
Is it possible for the dollar to dump and people are in gold and silver in places like Wyoming and Alabama, and other people are in cryptocurrency and they don't feel the hit nearly as much? Is that possible, or am I being naive?
No, I think that's right, and it's the end state. What we're going to see, though, first, a lot of people say, oh, the dollar is going to crash here. Well, it's not exactly. So eventually, if the currency loses the trust of the worldwide, you know, market or the American people, then it'll crash. But there's too much what they call dollar debt out there. And as people start walking away from their debt that's denominated in dollars, there's two kinds of dollars out there, Dave. It's called debt dollars and cash dollars. So the debt dollars – is there a scramble then for the cash dollars? And that's the dollar that you see when people say the dollar's doing this and the dollar's doing that. So you'll see a surge in the dollar at first, and then you'll see the dollar roll over. And so I think we're going to see that first. However, that does not preclude gold, silver, the miners, and cryptocurrencies rising what they call nominally with the dollar. That means it'll track with the dollar, and then as the dollar rolls over, they won't come down with it. And we're seeing that now. Mm. So when the dollar's gone up, cryptocurrencies have gone up. When the dollar has gone down, cryptocurrencies have gone down. So they're already starting to track the currency. And the same with gold, silver, and the miners. You know, the gold has been going up this week, even though the stock market's been struggling. So I think we're at that inflection point, Dave. I say within 2 years, the people that are in cryptos, gold, silver, and miners – are going to be relatively happier than the people that are stuck in financial assets only.
Well, what I find funny is that Jamie Dixon came out of J.P. Morgan Chase and said, crypto's bad, 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 and now they're pursuing it like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely. You know, those guys, you never watch what they say, you watch what they do. And I just hear it now. Every time cryptocurrencies go down 10 or 15%, and tonight, the trolls are out in force saying, it's over, it's done. I'm sitting there going, Goldman Sachs, a division of Goldman Sachs, or a company that they sponsor, just bought the fifth largest crypto exchange in the world. Now, Goldman Sachs, those people aren't idiots. They may be nefarious, but they're not idiots. They're not going to put their money into something they think is going to go away in 2 months. JP Morgan is advising their clients on how to accumulate these cryptocurrencies, and Switzerland and Japan, and by the way, and also Wyoming, Dave, and Arizona, Dave, are absolutely coming behind on these cryptocurrencies. I like to call them digital currencies, decentralized currencies, non-banker currencies, non-sponsored currencies. These are the things that don't have an owner that can then direct it, and gold and silver is the same way. There's nobody owns gold except the people who own their own gold, and the same with the cryptocurrencies is that if it's truly a decentralized coin, which about 80% of them are, and they're not a token or doing a function, is that they operate without, they operate what they call by consensus. And I tell people, don't worry about these wiggles. If it goes down, just keep buying in, because at some point there's going to be enough fear in the current system. And it's going to happen, Dave, I'm telling you, I'll make a prediction. It's going to happen in Europe first. They are scared witless in Europe of cryptocurrencies, because they know that they have to start grabbing those deposits in the banks. And people are going to pull their money out, and they're just going to simply transact in cryptocurrencies. And it's going to happen in the Mediterranean states. And those states are a bit anarchy anyway. You know, they don't really follow the central authority quite really well. And those people will just simply opt out and start trading on a trusted coin like the dollar or a cryptocurrency or gold and silver.
So they're just, well, I'm trying to think of a way to conceptualize it in my mind right now. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of multiple garage sales going on and trading and bartering because people don't want to engage in the regular currency. I mean, it's just like people are saying, you take the dollar over there, we're done as much as we can be done, and we're going to go over here and do our thing with cryptocurrency, with gold and silver. Are we going to see a bifurcation in the economy? I mean, how does this play out at the end?
That's so funny, Dave. As you were talking, I was formulating the word bifurcation in my mouth. You're exactly right. We're already seeing it. The population is splitting, and I think the economics are going to split. And the thing with this whole blockchain, set cryptocurrency aside for a second, the whole blockchain technology is going to force the parasites out into the open. And if you, producers are going to get paid. And parasites are going to be cut out of as a middleman. And I'm not talking about the poor people that are on welfare. I'm talking about the people that sit in centralized fashion and control, like banks, like brokerages, like the people that have centralized databases for intellectual property, or some of the social media companies. All those people sit on centralized databases, and as the blockchain decentralizes these things and does not allow, another example is the futures markets. So you know how gold and silver has been manipulated because the banks can just keep bringing contracts in that they don't own and say, I'm putting this for sale. Well, the blockchain forbids it. So all the ways in which people have made money since the Federal Reserve has come into being in the United States gets wiped out over the next 5 to 10 years. And so that's the bifurcation I see. So states like Wyoming and Arizona that are resource-based and their people are high-tech, you know, and their producers are going to do okay. And people who are out in California and New York, I tell people, I said, you know, you saw the movie when you were a kid called Escape from New York. Well, that's going to be a real event. Because what is the reason for New York in being, right? It's the banking center. Well, in the blockchain technology, you don't need banking. You simply do not need them. You know, you own your coin until you send that coin to somebody else. And you don't have to worry about it being stolen because you are your own bank. And you can keep it what's called cold out of the internet so people just can't swing by your PC and grab it. And so the banks are going to be worthless. They're not going to be worth anything. There's no need for them. The technology exists. We trade all the time. People even pay us sometimes in Bitcoin and Litecoin and such. And the transaction's immediate and it's cheap. And instead of paying a wire fee to move money back and forth, boom. You know, and information's going to go that way too, Dave. So I absolutely agree with you.
Man, the implications are so huge right now. What's going to happen to the debt? I mean, because people don't need to worry about the debt being paid for their own solvency. So does this mean there's going to be a debt jubilee, a repudiation?
Yeah, there's no way around it. There's simply no way around it. It's going to have to be. And I think that's why they don't want people in the the elites don't want people in the crypto space, because those are the people, their assets will be valued higher than, you know, what Roosevelt did to the people who owned gold. You know, he took all their gold and then revalued it to get rid of some of the debt, right? And when people have the cryptocurrencies, because it's decentralized and it's not sitting in the United States, you can't confiscate it. You'd have to literally go to people's houses, put guns to their heads, and said, "Give me your private key." how well is that going to go over? You know,
they'd have an easier time seizing the guns. Yeah, but listen, I've been working against the deep state since I've got into this business, and I know they're not going to go away quietly.
Nope.
What's the response going to be? What would you anticipate seeing?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think what, you know, the way Gandhi described it when he was trying to free himself from the British, you know, that they, first of all, they dismissed it as just a geek's toy, and then they poo-pooed it, and then they threw a little anger at it, and then now they're in the threatening stage, and eventually they're going to come to some sort of acceptance, because they simply cannot stop the tsunami. And the reason being is that they're just going to have bigger fish to fry, Dave. I mean, look, the young are just not engaging in debt, and the whole thing collapses. As us older people start to go into our sunset years and start dying off, you know, that debt goes away with these people. And the young people are not absorbing the debt.
Hmm.
And you know what? And they have this college loans. They're simply not paying it back. And when they start gaining power in the next 5 to 10 years, they're just simply going to demand that those debts go away. And I think you're going to see the Jubilee happen that way.
So you think we're a ways off from seeing a debt repudiation?
Oh, I don't know. You know, every prediction I have, I think you have to speed it up by 5 anymore.
That's true.
You know, yeah. I want to say, if I could put a timeline on it, it's a couple of years out. But geez, I mean, who'd have thought President Trump was going to be president, right? So I think things could happen really fast. All depends on the slip up. I mean, we have so much debt in the system right now, Dave. I don't know where the assassination of Sarajevo is going to come from. You know,
that's a good point. I love the phrase because it's so accurate. But let me go to a specific debt: the credit swap derivatives debt, which is what, 1.5 quadrillion, and that's a kind estimate. That's very low end. And, you know, so if that debt goes away, that debt gets repudiated, does that mean that's what will collapse Wall Street, like what should have happened in 2008?
Well, not if it goes away. I think if 2008 happened because the system ground to a halt a different way, it's that somebody couldn't pay back the debt. And so it started daisy chaining. Everybody started calling in their markers. So I don't know. I think if they decided to just say, we're just going to simply call all these insurance contracts null and void, that might be one way they start winding themselves out from this stuff. What people don't realize, though, most of those credit default swaps, a lot of them are interest rate dependent. So that's the other reason why I just don't think interest rates are going to break through, because it'll bust the banks. So I think that's I don't think that's where it's going to come from that end of it. I think it's going to come from you know, simply the consumer not being able to, or a central bank not being able to buy any more of our stocks, and that's Japan and Switzerland. And I think that starts rolling it down, because the margin debt on our stock market is over 2x the value of the market. So, you know, if they start calling in the margin debt at the brokers, then the stock market could fall in half in days or weeks.
Yeah. What about the price controls, or the drop controls they have on the stock market? If it drops a certain amount, the stock market shuts down. Will that slow things down, because it'll head off panic selling to some degree? What options does the SEC have there?
Yeah, it wouldn't stop it at all. I mean, all it does is delay the inevitable, because it's just going to scare the hell out of people. We've had a couple of those times where the market opened and it locks limits down 5 minutes after it opens. and it starts doing that for 3 or 4 days, is that eventually it's going to get down to the price it's going to get down to. All it does is just give policymakers a chance to see if they can inject liquidity into the stock market in some way, shape, or form to bring trust back into it. But those circuit breakers are simply there actually for the for policymakers, not so much for the investor.
Okay, and it's not likely that we'd see any liquidity come back in, because won't the foreign investors just run from the market?
They're going to run like crazy, but the central bank, the United States Central Bank, I mean, they could produce as much dollar credit units as they wish. And I'm gonna hold that thought. I'm gonna tell you what's happening that people aren't realizing right now, but it'll cause other issues. That's where the currency collapse hyperinflation comes into. You know, trying to solve one problem, they'll create another one that's far worse. But right now we're actually the foreign banks aren't lending to each other, Dave. There's a rate out there called the IOS. It's basically an interbank rate, and there's a LIBOR rate. That's the rate that that you and I, if we were big money people, that's the money that we would pay to borrow money overnight. Well, the bankers have a different rate, and it's now spreading. The bankers aren't trusting each other, and they're having what's called maybe a dollar crisis coming. And that means the Federal Reserve is going to have to start pumping dollars into the market. And if that happens, then there's going to be an opportunity. Stock market's going to suffer for that, but the gold and silver and the miners are going to pop, because it's just going to create additional dollar units out there that are just going to get absorbed by the metals and miners. So just keep an eye on that. It's called the IOS LIBOR spread. People just need to Google it; they'll see it. It's one of those things that makes no sense to you and I, because we don't live in that world, but it's a stress indicator, and every time it happens, it causes issues in the stock market, and is very supportive of gold, silver, and the miners. And that's why at Trade Genius we've been adding positions in the miners right now, and I'm fully expecting silver and gold to break up and out very soon here.
Man, we're talking an economic revolution before our eyes. So let's put on our black hats for a minute, and let's pretend we're the bad guys over at the Federal Reserve, or the global elite that control the Federal Reserve. What options do they have right now to bring this back under their control?
Well, what they're going to try to do is in Europe kind of gave us a foreshadowing, and China it gives us a foreshadowing. What the Chinese have done is they ring-fence their economy. So they don't let anybody in their country, very little is leaking out. They're keeping everybody inside of their banking system and their currency system. So what they could do is they can inflate away all the debts by producing more yuan, and they don't make it convertible to the outside world. So I think that's what – and Europe is going to be doing that as well, because nobody would buy a European bond – because it's so severely overvalued, and that's what they would love to do in the U.S. But we're a little bit of a herd of cats here, and so you're going to see Europe's going to try to do it, and you're going to see China's already doing it, and Japan in a sense, because they have a very compliant population, but that's what our Federal Reserve is going to try to do too. That's why they've been yipping and yapping about cryptocurrencies and this and that and everything, because they don't want people to exit the banking system. If they keep people in the banking system, then it doesn't matter what the dollar is. And I think Trump is doing a little bit of their bidding, in a sense that if you knock down world trade, which he's going to do through these tariffs, is that when most of the trading is done internally, domestically, then it really doesn't matter the value of your dollar, because
you could
declare whatever it is.
That makes a lot of sense. You're exactly right. But then that leads to isolationism. And this is where I want to bring in another avenue that I've been looking at with regard to China. China is an absolute military menace to every one of its neighbors, and I mean this sincerely. Forget the Korea situation where they're unpredictable on whose side they'd be on. They've threatened Australia. They're building these fortifications on the Spratly Islands, which take the place of aircraft carriers in fixed positions. They've threatened India. They've threatened Pakistan, and now Pakistan said, come on in and build a military base. They're threatening Vietnam. We had to send an aircraft carrier there last week. What are they going to be like 1929 Japan and start aggressively going after what they need because they don't have the raw materials they need to fully industrialize?
That's why they built the Silk Road.
And
they're doing it. It's called soft. It's called soft imperialism. In fact, I just spent 2 hours this afternoon just watching. There was a German documentary on the Silk Road. I wanted to learn it from a European's perspective, and China has a big problem. So their resources are too far away from them, and they have two avenues to get their food and their energy, and get their stuff to market, right? So they could build rail and road, which goes through Central Asia into Russia. Well, you know, Russia is a competitor of theirs, even though they're benignly allied, and the rest of it's going through Muslim countries. And China has a big Muslim problem in Western China. So, and the more they beat on those people, you know, the Muslims in the Central Asian regions are like, I'm not too sure I'm too excited about these guys. And then the other route is through the sea. And they've already agitated against Australia and against India. And India's like, you know what, you might have 1.2 billion people, but we have 900 million people, and we're no military slouch ourselves. And so the Chinese have intuitively figured out the sea lanes are probably closed to them. And they're going to have to bring everything over by rail or road. And so that's why America is spending a lot of time in Kazakhstan, is trying to complicate their ambitions there. But China is not a very good imperial power, you know. And so they're very – and I'll give you an aside. I have a friend, a neighbor actually, that's been in and out of Namibia for the last couple years, and the Chinese are deep in there. And what the Chinese do is that when they come in, they don't buy a company and employ the locals. They buy a company and bring their own people in, and then they underpay the people, and these people are scrounging. My friend says within 5 miles of a Chinese farm or a Chinese business, you know, like interest, is that there's no wildlife. The people out there foraging for food and killing everything, and so there's no love lost between the local populations and the Chinese companies. It's just the Chinese have bought off the elites in those countries to secure the resources. And so I think they have a very tenuous hold on everything. And so I always kind of like sit back and say, you know what, people say China's the next world power. They're not. You know, number one is that their currency is not convertible, number one. Number two is that they're more in debt to GDP than we are. Number three, their population is aging faster than ours is. And number four is that there's such a mercantilist economy and their people are so underpaid is that they can't switch to a consumption economy because you have to give up control to do that. And that's not in their DNA. And so I think China's going to have a very difficult time transitioning to a power like the United States. And we're sitting there, if we get our act together and not act stupid, I mean, we're going to be the world's leading energy resources. We already are the world's food resources. And if we make nice with Mexico and China, Mexico and Canada, is that we own like 70% of all the food production in the world and probably 60% of all the energy production in the world. I mean, so, and we have two huge oceans and some really advanced anti-missile technology to protect those three nations. So I just you just have to set the rhetoric aside and just think for a second. I think China knows that they're in trouble, and they're just going to they're trying to do whatever they can to secure supply lines, but they're very much like Japan, but even worse off, because Japan was at least able to attack resources actually in Indochina and in Malaysia and Indonesia, and those aren't really available to China. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And what I had an aha moment as you were laying this out with China, you know, and I'll just give you one example. China seems to be trying to solidify its control over the people. And what I mean by, I'll point to one thing. Google partnership with the communist Chinese with the social point system. You go to the wrong website, you could lose your job. You go to, you say something negative on your email, well, you might find yourself out of your apartment. And it looks like China's trying to basically, let's be, say, as become as autocratic as it can to solidify control over its people. And maybe that's because they know that they can't expand the way they'd like to.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I think our deep state's trying to use Google and Facebook and Twitter for those same ends, but in a more softer approach. Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Asian, just in nature, they're more of a collective kind of a mindset, you know. So some of that stuff just is more natural for them to go along, get along kind of a thing. But I think that stuff's going to start, especially if they have any kind of food famine, that stuff's just going to break down the social contract very quickly.
How does China's status come back and affect what's going on economically in our country with regard to decentralization? Is there of currency? Is there a relationship between the two?
We hold all the cards. I mean, you know, it's a short-term pain, long-term gain for us.
Sure.
I mean, what could China produce that we can't produce in 2 or 3 years if we needed to? You know, so I think all China has done for us was provide cheaper goods so that our politician wouldn't have to make some hard decisions. And so I don't really – I just don't see China having any kind of leverage over us, and whatever our currency decides to do, it's going to do. You know, I think China's more worried about the decentralized currencies more than the United States is, quite frankly.
Man, that's a revelation unto itself right there. I mean, that's kind of like the crowning jewel of this interview so far, what you said, because the media constantly builds up China as the boogeyman that's going to overtake us in so many different ways, militarily, trade. And you're basically telling me that's a load of bull.
Yeah, I mean, look, only 12% of our GDP is international trade, Dave. So when Trump says this tariff thing is easy, he's right. It's easy, you know, and he could play a lot of countries off each other to get what he needs to get as cheaply as he needs to get it while opening up markets for our goods. I mean, just think about it. There's nothing. I can't think of anything the Chinese have except for rare earths. But the Japanese have shown that when China cut the Japanese off of the rare earth metals to do high tech, the Japanese, you know, chemists and engineers and physicists within 2 years figured out a number of workarounds. And so I think the battle between the U.S. and China is actually going to happen in Africa.
Yes.
And actually influence in Russia, because that's where the strategic metals that we don't have enough of abundance, that's where they sit. And that's why I scratch my head at why we're constantly trying to antagonize Russia when they have metals and minerals that we absolutely need, you know, for our economic superiority. And Russia is desperate to be considered, you know, one of the gang, you know, and we just keep shoving it in their face. And, you know, today, you know, you saw the thing with them in the UK today. You know, Russia responded back saying, you don't give an ultimatum to a nuclear nation.
I saw that.
So, you know, so I just think that I think we probably push these guys to the wall. But that's where I think the battle's going to be fought. I think China itself is a big meh, in my opinion. You know, there's nothing the Chinese have that I can't get from Vietnam or India or Mexico, you know what I mean, or Bangladesh. And in fact, a lot of the Chinese are pushing out their production of those countries as well. So, you know, and the high tech that they have, the fab plants, everything, you know, with automation, AI. I mean, Dave, I mean, we could do a show on machine learning, AI, this fast manufacturing and you know, what do they call inductive manufacturing, and where things are just created in sand, and you know, and you can just produce what you need, you know, mass customization. I mean, I just don't see the advantage of waiting 3 or 4 or 8 weeks lead for China when I can you know, spend 3% more and get it in Santa Ana, you know.
Yeah, this is painting such a good picture. I want you to evaluate this comment. The European Union president came out and said, the U.S. is risking a trade war, and by God, we're going to give it to them. And my initial reaction was, you guys are in economic chaos. You got the bottom half of the European Union falling out, and they all want to leave. We'll take on that trade war, and we'll kick your backside. Was I blustering too much, or is that accurate?
No, I mean Europe. I mean, my biggest frustration is that we've been Europe's mercenaries for the last 50 years, and, you know, and Europe has constructed a taxation system that basically disadvantages our companies. So, it's the same boat. I mean, you know, now Europe produces some things that we really would want, especially around, you know, I think German high technology. But it's nothing that, you know, our people can't do. You know what I mean? It's just that we'd be at a disadvantage of some of that stuff, because I think the Germans, you know, and Japanese do some really, really, really interesting things around machine tools and robotics. But putting that aside, Europe's a mess. And I don't know what these people are thinking, inviting in people who absolutely don't believe in them, in fact hate them. And I think they created the seeds of their own destruction.
I was wondering the same thing, and we're seeing the rebellion spread through Europe, where what populism and nationalism, similar to what the Trump movement brought our country, is appearing. Well, I'd like to bring this back full circle now, because we started off our discussion this evening talking about the decentralization of currency as a buffer against the decline of the dollar. And you represent a company in Trade Genius that helps people make transitions like this and gets people to in a position where they can weather storms that could be coming. Let's talk a little bit about what people should be thinking about, and then also I'd like you to tell them how you could help them.
Yeah, so the theme that I tell people who will listen to me is that we're going to see over the short period of time, let's call it between now and 2 or 3 years out, you're going to see a movement away from what I call financial assets, you know, the FIRE assets, you know, financials, insurance, real estate, and such. And they're going to be moving to what's called real assets. And those are things like commodities and precious metals and cryptocurrencies. And so we've been positioning ourselves at Trade Genius. My one partner started in the cryptocurrency space in 2011 mining Bitcoin. And, you know, there's probably nobody that knows as much as he does. He's not a mathematician, but from a macro standpoint, he truly understands the coins that are going to be leading the economic revolution that's coming. And so we try to position people to get into the right coins, and then try to tell them how to get in it at the right prices. And we do that through training courses. We have trading rooms. We have we created algorithms that we put on TradingView, a software package out there that actually could get buy and sell signals of when, depending on how frequently you want to trade. And then we also provide signals, you know, directly out onto right onto their phones that say, hey, basically, hey, we think there's a good price to buy Bitcoin, or hey, I think it's a good time to lighten up, you know, and such and such. And we don't do that just on the cryptocurrency space. Is that on the side that I spend most of my time on is on what we call the stock side, the future side. And I'm an old silver trader. And so you can see it now, you know, where people are migrating to food stocks, they're migrating now towards the miners. And we have the same approach. We have courses, we have signal service, we have software, and I have actually wrote software that goes on Thinkorswim so people could trade the futures for oil and for gold and for natural gas and for the general index. So we kind of help people depending on what they like to trade. We even trade the binary options as well, which is a nice way for people that don't have a lot of money to learn how to manage leverage and how to trade what they call the swings intraday. And so that's what we do, and we do pretty well. You know, our thing is that you're not going to be driving a Lambo, you know, any of that crazy stuff. Is that we try to help people make money nearly every day.
Yes.
In the stock market, and we want to help people grow their wealth. But more importantly is that I want to get people, you know, we're kind of Wayne Gretzky-ian. You know, we want them to start thinking about what's coming next, you know, the next year or two out versus what's happening now. You know, Amazon and Facebook and Google and Netflix are the past. The futures are going to be metals and miners and commodities.
Oh, that is music to my ears when you said that. Now, I know Facebook is down 24%, but people don't like censorship, even when they're not directly affected. And this is why I think people are leaving the social media platforms by the droves.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook has now have sequential decline in viewership and in and actually time on what do you call it? I guess FaceTime. You know that they're actually online with Facebook, and you know, and same with, you know, I mean, look, I tell people, you know, I'm a little tongue in cheek. I said, look, the top five companies have a bigger net market capitalization than 90% of all the countries in the world. Okay. And probably 60% of them combined. One of them is a $1 trillion flea market, which is Amazon. The next two are basically ad agencies, which is Google and Facebook. And then you got a digital version of Blockbuster out there. Okay, and really the only company out there that I say that's doing anything that is what I would call primary research is actually Microsoft. You know, it's kind of been under the covers here a little bit, and they, you know, and they're a true software company. And then Apple's a phone company, you know, and how many people are going to buy $1,000 phone, right? So these companies, the way the stock market works is that everything flows to these bigger companies, and it's a cheap way for them to show the stock market doing well. But you get a crack in any one of these, and the stock market's gone, Dave. Yeah, exactly. I always tell people the two most fearful words that people will ever want to hear out of anybody's mouth is Amazon antitrust.
Well, it's coming. It's coming to Google. It's coming to Facebook. They're all being sued, and this is going to pick up momentum. You are so on the money. Well, let's talk about how you help people in terms of – well, we've done that, but let me just put it this way. People are listening and said, you know, Bob Kudla sounds like he knows what he's talking about. And I love your three-step approach, you know, education, expert guidance, and then you've got great software that helps people decide when to buy, sell, and hold with a great win rate in that software. It's fantastic. So how do people jump on, take advantage, and are you offering any specials?
Yeah, so just go to TradeGeniusAcademy.com, and we have usually six or eight different kind of specials out there depending on kind of a mix and match, kind of a grab bag, saying I just want cryptos, or I just want ETF, or I just want software, or I want just some consulting, or we have some combo packages in there. And those prices that you see there are already discounted prices. But for your viewers, Dave, if they just use the promo code Hodges, and if they sign up before the 25th of March, then they'll be able to get an additional 50% off those prices.
Oh, man.
Yeah, really good. And be able to take advantage of this stuff in trading. And the only thing I'll tell people to do not listen to what these people are telling you in the stock market. They're trying to keep you in stocks, and they're trying to keep you out of commodities, and they're trying to keep you out of cryptocurrencies, because they can't make any money in cryptos, and they can't make any money in gold and silver. They make all their money in the stock market. And so as you leave, their power goes away. And so that's why you see all these things all the time about, you know, gold's a relic and cryptocurrency's a fraud and, you know, jibber jabber. And because they can't monetize those things, and exposes their fraud, because those things are really sound money, and what they're peddling is counterfeit money.
Yeah, you're so right on the money. And everything that you said to me about a year ago about what was coming with the decentralization of currency, you were so right on the money. And you do such a great job for your people. But I just want to recap this very quickly. For the listening audience here on the Common Sense Show, if they go to TradeGeniusAcademy.com and sign up before the 25th of March, you're going to take 50% off the entire store.
Yeah, they just have to use promo code Hodges or we won't know who they are.
This is unbelievable. Well, it's believable, but it's fantastic, and it really is. Well, Bob, this has been...
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I'm so proud to be associated with you, because, you know, I do advertising with other people, and occasionally you'll get your complaint. I haven't had one complaint about Trade Genius ever. Not one time has someone called, hey, I listened to Trade Genius, and it just wasn't the way you said. That doesn't happen, and I'm telling you, this is now the time to get involved. You know what I like to say, Bob, about investing? If you just keep your money in the bank with 5% inflation, it's not going to be very many years until your money's cut in half. This is why you got to learn how to invest and step out beyond the negative interest rates of the banks and the inflation.
It's just no, absolutely. You got to stay away from the money, ahead of the money changers.
Okay, let me recap this again. TradeGeniusAcademy.com, 50% off with the promo code Hodges. And it's a no-brainer. It's absolutely a no-brainer. And that's good until the 25th of March. Well, Bob, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your expertise. I feel a lot better about what President Trump is doing, and I look forward to the next time that we're able to have you on the show.
No, Dave, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, we will talk to you again, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.